Case number 12-5153, Terrell J. Schweiler, United States Air Force retired Brigadier General Appellant v. Chuck Hagel, Secretary of Defense et al. Mr. Sheldon for the appellant, Ms. Lyons for the appellees.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is David Patrick Sheldon, and I, along with Edward Rodriguez and Brian Schenk, represent the appellant in this case, General Terry Schweiler. With leave of the court, I've reserved 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case presents squarely whether or not the acts of the Secretary of Defense and the General Counsel's Office violated the Military Record Correction Board statute by ordering the Secretary of the Air Force to rescind two previously favorable decisions.
Is there an antecedent jurisdictional question,
Yes, Your Honor. This case is on all fours with Judge Tatel's decision 1995 in Kidwell. The issues in terms of any type of monetary award do not flow from or would not flow from the jurisdiction of the lower court. There was only two instances where any type of monetary damages were even addressed, and that was in a waiver.
But was there anything in Kidwell like the language in the plaintiff's complaint here, paragraph M, where he seeks any other relief, including active duty and retired back pay? I don't think there was language like that in Kidwell, was there?
It's not clear because, of course, we don't have the complaint, but I think in terms of that language, it is mere surplusage. It's within Rule 54 of the court's rules. There was no specific demand for relief.
But there is here, right? There wasn't in Kidwell, but there is here. Is there a back pay demand?
No, Your Honor, I do not think so. What
does the complaint say about back pay?
It says in paragraph M, the only...
What does it say about that?
It says that the court should award any other relief, including back pay and allowances.
There was nothing like that in Kidwell, was there?
At least Kidwell,
I don't know if it's generic, but it didn't say it could be surplusage. But here you had a specific request for...
Yes, Your Honor, but... In terms
of waiver down to 110.
Well, it's not a back pay case. The lower court applied the APA in this case. What we're arguing about is whether the SecDef and SecAf's determination, ultimately SecDef's ordering and directing the Secretary of the Air Force to change a favorable complaint or a favorable decision of the VCMR.
So isn't Smalls your stronger authority rather than Kidwell?
Yes, I believe, I would submit it would be. In any event, I think that when the court looks at the any type of future monetary award, it stems from statutory and regulatory regulations downrange, not the jurisdiction of the court. It doesn't emanate from any specific award. And in fact, the lower court applied the APA. And in doing so, we believe that the lower court erred. This court should employ the cardinal canon.
I just want to ask you one more question about jurisdiction. Is there something about this court's case law as compared to the federal circuits that leads you to want to have your case heard here rather than there?
Well, this court is traditionally a keeper of APA litigation. Certainly, there are many, many different cases.
Well, the federal circuit does, too.
So, excuse me, Your Honor?
The federal circuit is very experienced with APA litigation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is there something about the case law that do you think you'll be on the merits at a disadvantage?
Well, I think the government's answer to that would be that Dysart is controlling in the federal circuit. We believe that this is not a Dysart case. It's not a 624 case. It's a 1552 case. I understand that the United States wants to make it a 624 case, but in actuality, what this case comes down to is Section 1552. Whether or not whatever happened during the course of General Choyer's removal from the promotion list in 1997, it is clear that not once but twice the Secretary of the Air Force acted to correct the records. The first time in 2004 to correct what the Air Force perceived as an error. The second time was in 2007 when the Air Force determined and the Secretary of the Air Force determined to correct an error, and or rather an injustice, to remove an injustice. There are two different prongs. In the latter case, which is admittedly a cleaner case, which is admittedly a cleaner issue because the Secretary is acting to remove that injustice, there was no authority whatsoever for the General Counsel to rescind, in essence, the final order of the court. The court must presume that Congress says in a statute what it means, and means in a statute what it says. When the words of a statute are unambiguous, the first canon of statutory construction is also the last. Judicial inquiry is complete. Congress made the rules for the land and naval forces under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 14. Congress exercised that authority by enacting Section 1552.
So let me be clear. If the general counsel of the department is of the opinion that the board exceeded its authority, there's nothing that can be done by either the general counsel or the secretary of the department?
If the Secretary of Defense, or for that matter, the general counsel acting, I suppose, through the Secretary of Defense, didn't believe that the decision of the Secretary of the Air Force was correct or final, the decision, or he had, there was two options available. One, they could, in essence, call up the president and say, Mr. President, I think we need a new Secretary of the Air Force because that decision is infirm. Secondly, what they could also do is lobby Congress for a change in the law.
Neither of those actions presumably would be retroactive.
Correct, Your Honor, because we believe that when Congress passed that language, that the decision is binding on all officers of the United States. It meant all officers of the United States.
Did not Congress mean a lawful decision?
No, I believe that they meant a final decision.
A final lawful decision? In other words, in a hypothetical situation, if you will.
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppose the board really did go off the deep end, contrary to your position, and directed some relief, and the secretary of that service approved it. And there's no question that neither the board nor the secretary of the service had authority to do what it did. Congress intended that that action would nevertheless be binding on the Secretary of Defense? This is the hypothetical, remember?
Yes, Your Honor. There are cases where agencies can sue one another, and certainly I think that that would be an option. But having the general counsel...
What would be an option?
Sorry, Your Honor?
What would be an option?
For an agency, interagency, to sue one another.
The Department of Defense to sue the Department of the Air Force.
Well, as crazy as it sounds, Your Honor, I think that the option of having the general counsel, rescind an order to the Secretary of the Air Force, and it's a staff lawyer for the general counsel's office ordering the Secretary of the Air Force to change his decision.
That doesn't answer the question I just asked you. You're suggesting that the Department of the Air Force, the Department of Defense, could sue the Department of the Air Force, which is a component of the Department of Defense?
There are cases where agencies have...
That would be a yes or no question.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Yes, Your Honor. The other thing is this is no different than having the EPA director make a determination when the President of the United States wants something contra. At the end of the day, it's the EPA director's decision. It's not the President's. And the president has to abide by that. If the president doesn't like that, he can get a new EPA director.
This is the president's promotion, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and that does not prevent the Secretary of the Air Force correcting an error or injustice. Under 10 U.S.C. Section 1552, Congress set up what is in essence a due process procedure for downrange decisions to be looked at and examined. And in that consideration, Congress said it's the Secretary's action that will be final, and it will be binding on all officers of the United States and that includes the Secretary of Defense. Congress also provided that the Secretary of Defense could weigh in terms of the procedures. All the implementation of 10 U.S.C. Section 1552 is found in the DOD directives and the Air Force regulations. All are consistent. This is the only case we have where the Secretary of Defense has ordered the rescission of a decision of any of the Secretary of the military departments. And we believe that in this case, that was legal error. It was contrary to law, specifically 10 U.S.C. Section 1552. And it satisfies what the court did below, satisfied Chevron, the first prong of Chevron. It determined, and this court must determine, whether the statute unambiguously forbids the interpretation adopted by the agency, the first prong of Chevron. And we believe that that's where this case is decided upon.
So in my hypothetical, do you agree, as the government argues, that your interpretation of the statute would interfere with the president's authority to make the decision about who to appoint?
No, Your Honor, we do not believe that. We believe that what...
Why isn't that the logical effect of your interpretation?
Because
the Secretary of the Air Force's decision is final, adopting the board's position. That's it for everybody, including the President of the United States.
That's what Congress has provided for in 10 U.S.C. Section 1552. In essence, what the court did below was to merge two statutes together, and that's impermissible where the statute unambiguously forbids the agency's interpretation. That's what the court did below, and we believe that that was contrary to law, specifically 10 U.S.C. Section 1552. Where Congress acts and where their words are unambiguous, judicial inquiry stops at that point. And it's not a question that we're overturning the president's decision in 1997. It's a question of whether or not 1552 was adhered to, something that Congress put within the bounds of the statute in the hands of the Secretary of the Military Department, not the Secretary of Defense. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Counsel for appellees.
Good morning. May it please the court. As the court's already identified, there are two main issues presented in this case. The first is whether the claims as pleaded in the complaint are at least in part brought under the Little Tucker Act, such that this appeal belongs exclusively in the Federal Circuit. The second issue, if the court has jurisdiction, if it finds that it does, is the role of the Air Force Board of Correction for Military Records and the Secretary of the Air Force within the Department of Defense and the Constitution. As to the first question, the complaint's combination of a waiver of damages over $10,000 in paragraph 5 and a request for relief in the form of back pay and retirement pay, including for a retirement date extended from General Choyer's actual retirement date by several years, implicates at least a claim in part for some damages.
So it's the waiver plus what exactly? The paragraph M?
The paragraph M that requests...
And so is that how you distinguish Smalls?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say a couple things about Smalls. Smalls focuses on the idea that in analyzing the jurisdictional question, the court should stay within the four corners of the complaint and not focus on any automatic consequences that might be granted, and that we can do here and still find that there's a claim for damages. The complaint includes a recitation in paragraph 42 and in 65 of essentially a recap of the petitions and the request for reconsideration that General Choyer made to the board. And those highlight the difference I was just talking about in terms of the promotion date he asked for, January 1, 1997.
So let me ask you, if the district court had agreed in this APA action with the general's position, then is it the government's position that the district court could proceed to award him back pay and whatever other retirement benefits he might be entitled to in this APA action?
Not in an APA action, because damages are generally not an available remedy under the APA, of course.
And isn't this an APA action?
Right. The question really at this point is...
what I'm trying to understand is when Small says we should focus on, you know, what type of action and what the core of the complaint is, why should the court ignore that this is an APA action and that the district court would not have authority to order this monetary relief?
Two answers to that. The issue is squarely presented before the court right now as to what kind of claim this is. Neither the plaintiffs...
I thought you just agreed that it was an APA action.
I agree that the district court treated it as an APA action.
So you don't think this is an APA action?
At the present... as presented to this court, it has been addressed as an APA action. The question is whether there is, in part, also a claim for damages. And
so you would say that, regardless of how the complaint is filed, we would look at the relief paid in order to determine that some of the relief is monetary?
Yes, Your Honor.
So let me just be clear about this. That then, wouldn't the district court have had to just dismiss the APA claim? Because it had no authority to award damages.
It would not have had authority to award damages under the APA. It might have had authority to award damages under another theory, perhaps the Little Tucker Act. The question here is two things don't govern. Mm-hmm. Neither the plaintiff's subjective intent in forming the complaint and artful pleading, neither the district court's treatment of it. At this point, neither of those factors have been things that this court looked at in terms of resolving this jurisdictional issue. And our burden is only to show that the claim, in part, is one for monetary damages, and we resolve that by looking at basically the plain language of the complaint. And here, unlike cases such as Sharp, which the appellant relied on heavily in their brief, where the prayer for relief was just for costs and other relief, that was held not to be of significance to the jurisdictional inquiry. This is very different because here we have a specific request for retirement and back pay. So it's more like Hubbard versus EPA, where First Amendment retaliation claims that could have triggered back pay relief were held to be beyond the jurisdiction, essentially brought under the Little Tucker Act. So this court's precedents, especially when you couple the claim for the money and the waiver, both being in the four corners of the complaint, suggests that the court's appellate jurisdiction is lacking and that this case belongs in the Federal Circuit on appeal. If there are no further questions on the jurisdictional issue, I'll turn to the APA, at least briefly. First of all, I'd like to say that this case is different from a situation where the EPA, I think, was the example that Mr. Sheldon used. This case involves the military chain of command. It's an entirely different and entirely, or at least partially, constitutional construct. And there are separation of powers problems created with their interpretation of Section 1552 as according the correction board so much authority to override even the presidential appointment authority. With respect to the argument that Section 1552 is plain on its face, I say that yes, but it falls within the larger statutory construction providing for the Secretary of the Air Force to be subordinate to the Secretary of Defense, who in turn is also subordinate to the President.
What do you say to their argument that the specific should govern over the general in terms of
In terms of that, Your Honor, I would say that the more specific statutory authority providing the President the authority to remove General Choyer's name from the promotion list controls. So as to General versus specific, they're in the middle. There's a more general statutory...
Let's get to the specific of what was done here by the Convictions Board and then changed by the Secretary of Defense. They would say that the statutes governing the authority of the board to be honored by all officers in the United States and the authority given the Secretary of Defense to control procedures is a more specific statute than the statutory structure that puts defense over air. What would you say to that argument?
I would say that the response to that is that the statutes that create the board in the first place, before they can do anything, they have to be created, are limited by, the board's authority is limited by those statutes, and those statutes allow for the correction of records. But the Secretary of the Air Force could never delegate to the correction board the authority to contradict the president's removal of General Choyer's name from the appointment list, so that there's no authority there on which the board can exercise to, in the first place. And that's essentially what the general counsel of the Department of Defense concluded. So there's no action that they can take properly. There's the authority to create the board allows them to act only on proper applications. Well, this is an improper application. And moreover, as Judge Rogers pointed out, it never reached a final state of being a correction because of the intervention of the Department of Defense. Nothing, certainly, in the statute 1552 suggests that it was intended to usurp or be used to usurp the president's appointment authority under the Constitution.
So I just want to be clear how we should interpret this complaint. Paragraph 1 says, at the appendix 6,
yes,
this is an action for APA review of actions of the Department of Defense and Department of Air Force personnel, etc. And in the prayer, 31 is the boilerplate, grant any other relief, and then more specific is including active duty back pay and retired pay. So you view the fact that the complaint plus the waiver is authorizing the district court to award damages in the amount of $9,999.99, essentially.
No, I'm simply arguing that the language you just referred to makes this complaint pray for or make a claim for damages.
In other words, if a complaint is filed under Statute A and it requests in the prayer, relief under Statute B, don't courts just treat that as surplusage? Because the case is not brought under Statute B.
The determination of whether a case is brought or a claim is appropriate under any particular statute is, of course, something that courts address routinely.
So the complaint reads the way we just reviewed. The district court treated it as an APA claim. And now this court should treat it as a non-APA claim because of paragraph M?
No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm suggesting. I believe there is an APA claim in this case. The question is whether there is also, in addition to that perhaps, some sort of a claim for damages, and the source of jurisdiction here would be the Little Tucker Act.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I'm not suggesting there isn't an APA claim in this case.
And so the waiver is what amends the complaint?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, the waiver of...
In other words, I'm trying to find out how you get the Tucker Act in this case. Is it because of the waiver that he says...
Yes, it's the explicit reference to a waiver of damages in excess of $10,000. It reminds me a little bit of saying to your spouse, no, I don't want the last piece of cake. Well, that still implies that you want a piece of cake. And similarly here, the waiver as expressed suggests that there would be a claim for damages.
Waiver plus paragraph M.
It's both.
Okay.
It's both taken together, and because they're both within the four corners of the complaint, that's what we have to look to. And it doesn't have to be a full-blown claim. It just has to be a claim in part for damages under Vandrasik for this court to find that the appeal belongs in the Federal Circuit. There are no other questions. I would ask that the court either dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction or affirm the summary judgment in favor of the Secretary.
Should we dismiss or should we transfer to the Federal Circuit?
That would be another option, Your Honor, would be to transfer to the Federal Circuit, yes. Thank you.
Your Honor, turning to the issue of jurisdiction, Judge Rogers, I believe that you have identified in terms of what we asked for and what the district court could have awarded. The district court, if they found in our favor, would not have awarded damages. They would have remanded this case to the agency for further proceedings.
But you could have, I just want to be clear about this, under your complaint as pled, with the waiver, you could have obtained over $9,000 in damages.
No,
is that correct?
I don't think that's not what we were asking for. We were asking.
What were you asking for?
Yeah.
We were asking for the rescission. In this complaint, we asked for a determination that the Secretary of Defense's actions were unlawful under Section 1552.
Paragraph M says.
It says back pay and allowances. You're
read
right.
Me what it says.
And
I have a hard time getting
it. But the point is not what it says.
Judge Chantel asked you to read M. Why don't you read it?
Yeah,
you
yes,
have
Your Honor.
JA-31.
General Rodriguez can hand you your.
Grant any other relief, comma, including active duty back pay and retired pay.
So that, you're actually asking for a grant of back pay and retired pay?
That is mere surplusage under Rule 54.
You're actually asking for a grant of back pay and retired pay. Now, under Rule 54, the surplusage don't have specific prayers.
We believe that this case is on point with Smalls and Kidwell, Your Honor.
In Kidwell, I think the opinion, you can correct me, I think we actually said in the opinion that the complaint did not seek back pay.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, well, you told me a little while ago that we didn't have the complaint before us. So.
Well, I mean, that's what your language and your decision said, Your Honor. I mean,
but that's a pretty significant difference between this case and Kidwell.
But I submit to you, Your Honors, that this is not a money case. It's an APA case.
But let me ask you, just following up on Judge Santel's request, if you read all of paragraph 10 through what you read, namely back pay and retirement, as this honorable court deems just and proper to provide complete and full relief to plaintiff.
Correct, Your Honor. It falls within the surplusage of Rule 54. Mm-hmm. My time is up, I see.
All right, thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.